welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn and this is episode number 201 of the podcast, and it's 10th of November 2014 as I record this. So thanks for all the emails and the comments I got about episode 200, and I really appreciate your enthusiasm about wanting the show to continue. I've had lots of emails saying please don't stop, so thank you so much for that. I really do appreciate it, and you know, I love doing the podcast, I love doing interviews, so onwards to show 300. Hopefully it won't take another 3 years. Although it's so funny, you know, what we do is a long-term game, so I'm certainly intending, you know, touch wood bar some horrible accident, I'm intending to be around for many years to come. I'd like to aim for, I'm 40 next year, so let's say another 50 years. I wonder if you'll still be listening to my podcast in that time, or whether I will be beaming my thoughts to you or something, I don't know. But it's very exciting how things move on. Anyway, today I have an interview with Jeremy Bomar about publishing in the Christian markets. Jeremy is a theologian like myself and a Christian. He works in publishing, he's an author, and we've been in touch for years. He also reads my fiction. So I know many listeners are Christians, so this will be directly relevant to you, but also we will talk about lots of things that will make other authors think about audience targeting. I certainly learned a lot. I'm not a Christian, but I write in religious and supernatural themes, I guess. Pretty much all my books have some kind of demons in, or are based on, start with a quote from the Bible or something, and I bring in my own theological bent, I guess, to my writing. So I know a lot of authors who write books that have religious or supernatural or spiritual themes but are not specifically Christian. So I talked to Jeremy about that as well, and the kind of difficulty of falling through a gap. And if you do write the same genre as me, I have a little bit of a, I want to do a sort of lobby to get another category on Amazon and on BSAC for thrillers supernatural or thrillers religious, because they're not, you know, there's a big category for Christian but not for specifically religious or supernatural thrillers. So yeah, I've had a few people email me about this. So email me joanna@thecreativepen.com, and I'm sort of putting that together slowly. You know, this is one of these discoverability things. You know, I like to read these books as a reader, and at the moment there's nowhere to find them. So yeah, anyway, personal update. I have finished the second draft of Gates of Hell. I finished that just last week, and that is now with my editor. So I do hope to get that out for Christmas, just sorting out the book cover and all of that. And I was going to start another series, completely different series for NaNoWriMo, but it is the 10th of November already. I haven't started, so I'm already late. I plan instead to write a novella in the Arcane universe set in New York, with my character Jake Timber, who is going to get his own outing in a novella. So my aim will be to get some kind of draft done by the end of NaNoWriMo. Since it's a novella, it won't be 50,000 words, it'll probably be like 30,000. So I'm going to try that. I'll see how far I get. But basically, I decided I couldn't do it justice to, you know, I couldn't do a new series justice to invent a whole, you know, new characters, new worlds and everything. So, and also I think once you're writing in a series, you know, I'm thinking that it's better to lump together several books in that series and then switch series. So I'm actually going to do Gates of Hell, then the New York novella, and then another Arcane book, and then I'm going to get back to my other series to do Deviance, and then I'm going to focus on this third series. So yeah, pushing the production for sure. And we should always remember, you can't edit a blank page. So that first draft material is critical stuff. So I'm pushing ahead with that. other things, the Indie Author Power Pack, if you haven't heard, we've been pushing that pretty much everywhere, so you should have heard. Still on special for a few more days if you're listening in mid-November 2014. It contains The Rewritten, How to Market a Book, Rewritten, Let's Get Digital by David Goffren, and Write, Publish, Repeat by Johnny B. Chuan and Sean Platt. And our plan with this is to do a box set to hit the non-fiction New York Times list. So we'll see if we made it. Probably by the next time I record a podcast, I can tell you if we made it. We did all kinds of guest posts and stuff, all the things you do with a non-fiction platform. So we'll see how that goes, and I'll let you know. But it will be pulled off sale very soon because it was just a short-term promotion. We were part of the March to a Bestseller event last weekend with the boys from the Selmore Book Show, organised by Brian Cohen and Jim Cookroll. It was crazy, actually. I think there were about 20 authors involved answering questions on Facebook. And I did a 2-hour stint and I literally did not stop typing for 2 hours as I answered questions, hopefully answered some of yours. It was actually a lot of fun. And I'm doing something similar on Goodreads this weekend, Saturday 15th of November. I know a few of these things are time dependent, so if you're listening after the weekend, then don't worry. But if you are listening before Saturday the 15th of November, I'm answering questions between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. US Eastern, or 4 till 6 p.m. London, and doing a giveaway for Day of the Vikings. And there'll be other authors like Orna Ross, Linda Gillard, Joni Rogers, and a whole load of others. And the theme is strong and unusual heroines. And I've set up a redirection so you can get there at thecreativepen.com/Goodreads. That will take you to the event page if you'd like to come and ask me questions, which, you know, and I'm happy to answer anything. It doesn't have to be about Day of the Vikings. You can just come along and I will talk to you live. I've actually never done one on Goodreads, so it's going to be interesting. But I, you know, just thinking in a broader sense in terms of these events for marketing, I think they are more about like being a real person and bringing some life to a static profile. And you can connect personally with people when you do these chats, and then they are kind of far more likely to remember you and be interested. And I do post reviews on Goodreads pretty regularly, so this live event will be an interesting addition to my Goodreads thing. So I am actually doing quite a lot of marketing stuff at the moment. So that's some chats for the non-fiction, and for the fiction, doing a book giveaway for Christmas, which you can enter to. The giveaway is at thecreativepen.com/Christmas, spelt the long way, not X, just, you know, C-H-R-I-S-T-M-A-S, thecreativepen.com/Christmas. We're giving away, this is 12 of us mystery and thriller writers. You can enter to win 12 print books that will be sent anywhere in the world on December the 5th. There are a few countries like Japan that can't do these type of giveaways, but basically try and enter and you should be fine. So 12 print books. The plan is that we want to buy your Christmas presents for you. So yes, you can enter that. What else? I'm recovering from speaking again. I know I said about Frankfurt, it just kills me. My introvert battery is on recharge at the moment. What did I do? Yes, a full day seminar this weekend on building a business as a creative entrepreneur. And although I'm really tired, it was the best full day seminar I think I've ever taught in terms of audience engagement and the topic, because I was basically outlining how I run a business as an author with fiction, non-fiction, the blog, speaking, sponsorship, affiliate payments, all of that type of thing. A lot of what is in my book, Business for Authors. And I think the reason it was so good is, you know, I get kind of annoyed by, well, annoyed is probably the wrong word. I get tired of teaching things like book marketing on its own, how to write a book on its own. You know, I prefer to put things in a context of running a business. So actually focus these things on the entrepreneurial side. So it's really great to actually be able to present on that and teach 24 people how they could make a living with their writing, which to me is just super exciting. So that went down well, and I hope to run that again next year in London, and I might also do that as an online course. Not sure about that, but we'll see. I've also booked my tickets to New Zealand for Christmas. I actually lived in Auckland for 7 years, and I have a Kiwi passport, and my husband is a Kiwi, so it is a family trip. But I am organising a meetup on Tuesday, 16th of December, 2014. So just trying to sort out a venue for anyone who's in or around Auckland. So that will be fun. Right, that's pretty much everything. Playing catch up. We should just get on with the interview, shouldn't we, really? But excitingly, the podcast is sponsored by 99 Designs today. And what is very cool about 99designs.com is that you put your project up, so you whether that's a book cover or a t-shirt or a logo or a business card or a banner or, you know, website design, and then lots of designers will submit designs for you to look at. This might also be an author branding thing, so I get a lot of questions about, you know, what, how, you know, I need a banner for my website, but I don't really know what branding I am. So this could be a way to get people to help you. And if you use the Power Pack upgrade at 99designs.com/Joanna, you'll get more visibility, which means more submissions. And then once you get all the submissions, you can choose the design you like best, and then you can do polls with your audience or on social media to see what people like. And I really love that feature because, you know, you might think that this is the best one, but other people might think another one is. So it's great to get feedback. And of course, you only pay if you're happy and you actually pick a design. So there's really no risk. And I've been thrilled with the illustration I got done for Gates of Hell. Really awesome. So you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, to get a $99 Power Pack upgrade services, which will be free if you use that link. Okay, so that corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting of the over 200 shows now. Does add up. But my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to the people supporting on Patreon. A shout out to new sponsors, Kelly Sefton and Cassandra Charles. Thank you so much, Kelly and Cassandra, and everyone supporting on Patreon. I really appreciate it. Patreon is like an ongoing Kickstarter kind of idea. So you pay per show to a maximum of 2 shows a month, giving even just a dollar. So it's less than a coffee a month. And if you'd like to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/thecreativepen. That's patreon.com/thecreativepen. Or of course, you can buy my books or tell people about the show. Thank you so much, and let's get on with the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Jeremy Baumar. Welcome, Jeremy.
Hey Joanna, thanks a ton for having me on. Really appreciate it.
No worries. So just a little introduction. Jeremy is the author of nonfiction and fiction books, as well as an entrepreneur. He was previously an evangelical Christian pastor and writes for HarperCollins Christian Publishers, as well as dealing with aspects of faith in his books and on his blog. And today we're talking about aspects of the Christian publishing market, which I have a lot of questions about. And Jeremy and I have known each other online for, goodness, I would say a couple of years now, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's been like 2 years,
yeah,
for sure.
Like 2 years, and also you've read some of my fiction, haven't you?
I've read all of your fiction, so major fanboy over here. If you start to see me sweating or stuttering, it's because I'm swooning, that's why.
That's so sweet. But why, and I guess for anybody, you know, who's wondering, I mean, I'm not a Christian, you are a Christian. Today we're talking about the Christian market, and I'm very respectful, as you know, of
of matters of faith. So, and I have a degree in theology, and so do you. And, you know, so I feel like, you know, we share a lot in common, even though we have one quite big thing not in common. We still think a lot. So let's just start by, you know, after we both had degrees in theology, your career took a very different turn to mine. So tell us about you and your background in faith and in writing.
Yeah, sure. So my background is basically in politics and religion. So you can imagine I'm not all that popular at parties because I have nothing else to talk about. The two things you're never supposed to talk about, right? So yeah, post-college, graduated with a degree in political science, fled my hometown to Washington, D.C., and found a job working for a United States senator for about a year, was doing that gig, which was pretty exciting. And I, like a lot of Christians who, you know, up and moved to big centers of sort of cultural power, was heading out to make my mark and to sort of win Capitol Hill for Jesus, right? And didn't so much do that in on the inside, but ended up finding myself into a ministry called the Center for Christian Statesmanship, in which we were kind of pastors to politicians. So I met with members of Congress for prayer, delivered Bibles to new ones, and then, but mostly met with their staff for prayer, spiritual encouragement, Bible study, spiritual mentoring, kind of came alongside them in their journey, both spiritually and in their life. And yeah, pretty amazing experience and opportunity. And it was in the context of that, in the midst of that ministry experience, that I began to have sort of a crisis of faith for myself. You know, having sort of grown up in the Christian bubble of West Michigan, Grand Rapids is like this, the promised land of this hub of Christianity, given the colleges and publishers and the amount of churches we have. And so between that and going to a Christian college, I did not know how to handle the context and environment of DC with the myriad of competing worldviews and perspectives. And then in the ministry context, my friends were asking me questions about faith, life, everything in between that I really didn't have answers for, that my faith hadn't prepared me for. And so I began to ask those questions myself about what does it mean to even be a Christian? What is the gospel, the story of Christ? How does that fit with these other faiths around the world? And yeah, that was 2004, 2005, and found that writing really helped me work through those questions. And so, like a lot of people a decade ago, launched my own little plot in the digital landscape. NovusLumen.net was my blog site where I began working through those questions, answering those questions for me as well as my friends and other people. Became pretty heavily involved with the online evangelical and kind of progressive evangelical blog scene, and began sort of working through this crisis through writing and blogging. And from there, I began to sort of sense a greater calling, if you will, to kind of a broader pastoral ministry. So I went back home, spent 5 years getting a Master of Divinity as well as a postgraduate Master of Theology and Historical Theology, and helped pastor a church a bit, pastored another church a bit, and in the midst published my first book. Actually, it was 6 years ago, 2008, Reformation Day, October 31st. Felt that this was sort of like my own mini version of Martin Luther nailing up his 95 theses with my book, The Unoffensive Gospel of Jesus, and released that out there through POD, Lightning Source, and later as a Kindle book. And caught the bug for publishing it and writing in sort of a broader vocational sense. And so since then, I've published 9 other books. I have a fiction, hopefully 3 fiction books coming out next year. And then now have transitioned into a full-time writing, author, entrepreneurial career. Thanks to you, Joanna Penn. Thank you for that. Where now, yeah, I write and do content marketing for HarperCollins Christian Publishers, as well as help a small publisher launch a new translation of the Bible. So that's been kind of my journey, kind of a circuitous route to this kind of space I'm in now of trying to just bring life change and impact our world through the vehicle of writing and publishing.
No, it's really fascinating because you talk there about, you know, your writing has helped you work through what you think. And that's how I feel about my fiction. Like, I feel like I write about supernatural things because these questions of stuff that goes beyond what you can physically see, however you, whatever you want to call that, whatever people feel is spiritual or supernatural or whatever, that is difficult. And so by writing, whether it's through, you know, a blog about religion and theology or about writing fiction, it's kind of the same thing. Like, you're working out what you believe, don't you? So do you find that you, I mean, I notice, and I've said to you before, you're a very smart man with a lot of degrees. And one of the things, you know, do you find, and I've said to you before, I think the language that you use can be very academic, I guess. Have you found that your writing has changed from when you first kind of did the academic side of theology to the kind of reaching readers side?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that shifted when I became a pastor. Because people, you know, who are mechanics or bakers or housemans, they don't connect with the upper academic language and discourse. And so, yeah, I think like any writer, you evolve your craft as much as you evolve it for the audience in which you're writing for. And so as I've sort of stepped into, you know, the stories of people who lost their husbands to cancer at 34 and came alongside people who are struggling in their marriages or whatever, I began to just, I think, connect at a deeper level in a way that people can kind of understand in a language sense. And that's my heart for writing anyway. It's not the academy. I mean, I had thought of going on to get a PhD, but really my heart is writing for the church, and especially just kind of quote-unquote average Christians rather than, you know, the scholar or the pastor.
Right, so I wanted to kind of move into, you know, and I've mentioned this to you before, I feel like I write religious thrillers, you know, thrillers that are based around religion, and I want to write something around like a Hindu thriller, which will be clearly religious but not Christian, and I don't feel I can put my books in Christian fiction because they're not kind of edifying of Jesus, and so this is something I struggle with all the time. So I wonder if you could explain the spectrum of what you see in the Christian publishing industry. What are the different subgenres that are out there right now within the Christian publishing realm?
Yeah, let me sort of talk about the broader Christian publishing market, because I think that'll help to give context a bit more. Because it's interesting, I feel as though that the Christian publishing world is sort of the sleeping giant that most people really don't understand or consider. What's interesting is that the Christian market is this $1.2 billion market, almost like, I think it's 10% or so of the broader sort of consumer publishing market. In America, at least, I think it's 73% or so identify as Christian. Christians buy more books than the average person, as well as spend more money on books than the average person. So lots of money, revenue to be had within the market, which makes sense why the big New York houses have all sort of bought up and purchased previously independent publishing imprints and companies. The largest one, of course, is HarperCollins, which bought up Zondervan in the 90s, as well as Thomas Nelson a few years ago. Those were the top two, and now consolidated to, I think, 50% or so of the Christian publishing market. And then Simon & Schuster has Howard Books, Hachette, Faithword, Center Street, Jericho Books, Random House, Waterbrooks Press, Multnomah. But what's fascinating about the Christian market, though, is that the big five don't dominate outside of HarperCollins Christian, the marketplace, as independent publishing units do. So next to Zondervan, Thomas Nelson, you have Broadman and Holman, which is part of the Southern Baptist Convention. You have Tyndale, Crossway, InterVarsity Press, David C. Cook. So a number of smaller independent presses, which kind of make up the rest of the independent market, excuse me, the Christian market. And what's interesting that you have to kind of realize, and this, I think, we'll get to your question about how do you market for, how do you approach the Christian market, specifically within the broader religious, is realizing that when we're talking about the Christian market, we're usually and mostly talking about the evangelical market. Not all Christians who buy books are evangelicals, but the majority of the Christian market is catered towards evangelicals, given that they have the publishing houses, the retail outlets like Family Christian Stores, Mardell,
Lifeway, as well as the big sort of evangelical personalities that are putting out the books and standing behind the books. So I like to call it the evangelical industrial complex. It is sort of what, because of this massive unit that is within the publishing realm. And it's kind of a tough market to crack because evangelicals typically purchase from the evangelical specialty stores, Family Christian, Lifeway, and they, those stores are not generally going to include a book by an independent author or an independent press if they don't know that they meet sort of the spiritual criteria and are doctrinally sound, doctrinally correct, which is why they typically go back to these known entities. So that's kind of the mostly U.S., even broadly into U.K. and Canadian English Christian market. And then within then we have the genres, which, of course, are sort of Christianized versions of the major genres. You have Christian romance, Christian sci-fi, Christian suspense and thriller, Christian detective and thriller. And the dominant with genre within the Christian market are Amish books. The Bonnet books, as a friend of mine likes to say, I think 50 Shades of Grey for ladies, sweet ladies in the church is what Amish fiction is. My mom loves Amish fiction, which are typically like historical romance, basically, is how you would categorize those. And yeah, so that's kind of how that works. Christianized versions of the big, genres that you would think of.
Yeah, and then, I mean, within that, so you mentioned the Amish thing, which I've heard about as well, and but there's also Amish erotica, and I mean, what are your opinions on the more extreme version? So we've got, so say Amish erotica, and then you've got things like, so Ted Decker, who's a Christian, right, and writes in the Christian market, who writes horror. I mean, one could argue that it's horror. So you've got, some extremes at the end of, I mean, even, I don't know whether, you know, LaHaye and, you know, the Left Behind
series. Yeah.
The Left Behind series. I mean, that's post-apocalyptic. I mean, it's based on the rapture, which, you know, which, however you argue, it hasn't happened yet, if you believe it's going to happen. So it could be post-apocalyptic stroke fantasy. So what do you think of these kind of more of the edgy things? Where does that sit on the spectrum?
It is a bit fascinating to see how some of these compare with, you know, the sort of the mainstream titles. I haven't heard of the Amish erotica yet. That's an interesting one for me. But even if you take something like Tim LaHaye's Left Behind, it's like horror light. I mean, you know, people are dying, people are blowing up, I guess, but compared to some of like the other, you know, Stephen King, for instance, the Christian version of it is going to accommodate an evangelical market. And you're not going to have an evangelical publisher who's going to publish things that that aren't palatable to the evangelical market. And what's fascinating, though, is that evangelicals and Christians more broadly, but especially evangelicals, are more tolerant of violence than they are of
swearing.
Of swearing or sex. Interesting story. There was a Christian writer, Rachel Held Evans, who didn't do a fiction book. She published a nonfiction book with Thomas Nelson, The Year of Living, Living Biblical Womanhood or something like that. And I don't know if you heard, there was this big sort of hubbub around her desired use of using the word vagina in her book in a way that was totally appropriate and not, you know, not weird. But the publisher didn't allow her to use that word in her book because they knew that one of the major Christian outlets would refuse to stock her book because of using that word, which is sort of like, really? I mean, come on. This is not like Amish erotica here. This is talking about biblical principles of womanhood, and she was using that word in a way that was, you know, contextual and appropriate to the book. Mm. But yeah, there's this interesting tolerance when it comes to different themes. Violence is okay, whether it's in this post-apocalyptic kind of setting within Tim LaHaye, some of the crime novels. But when it comes to sex or swearing or even like drug and alcohol use, actually my fiction book, I have quite a lot of our spiritual conversations happen at the pub.
Yeah,
Jesus
turned water into wine, right? When Jesus turns a vat of water into wine, he clearly approves of some drinking.
Absolutely.
That's clearly biblical.
Funny, but I mean, that kind of gets to understanding the evangelical market when you want to understand the Christian market and some of those tolerances and some of those idiosyncratic and peculiarities of the culture, as much as some of the theology that you're writing for sure.
And the Mormon, do Mormons have a separate kind of Christian public, because, you know, well, whatever, do they have a separate publishing area, I guess?
Yeah, I believe that the LDS sort of like headquarters in Utah has their own sort of like denominational imprint that publishes curriculum, books, their own, I guess, Second Testament of Joseph Smith, separate than, yeah, I mean, you know, the major Christian publishers wouldn't touch those titles for sure.
Do you know Michael Wallace and his series, which is a kind of Mormon thriller?
I think so.
Yeah, really interesting.
Oh,
Michael Wallace. It's brilliant. I love it. Again, to me, religious fiction based around a religion. You know, a breakaway kind of polygamous group, and really fascinating. But has sort of turned post-apocalyptic, but very much reminds me of these type of books, and I love the series. But definitely, he can't. You know, ex-Mormon writes, you know, fiction in that,
sure.
You know, so it's not, again, not in that market, but outside that market, kind of looking in. But then just talking about the wider market. So, for example, I have a Spanish version of Pentecost, which is out now. And I've got a Portuguese one coming out in Brazil, bought by a publisher who wants to appeal to a Christian Catholic market, because, you know, Pentecost has a lot of the Christian stuff and it fits with a Catholic,
for sure,
a Catholic market. So what do you see? I mean, obviously there's the Philippines, which is a very Christian religious country. What do you see of the kind of global appeal and the global market for these types of books?
Yeah, you know, I would say that the global Christian market isn't as developed as the US one, perhaps with the exception of South America or Latin American countries, given how, to your story, how closely the Catholic faith is defines their culture. And so you have plenty more imprints and companies set up to cater to those Spanish-speaking markets. And I would imagine within like Africa or Asia, HarperCollins Christian actually has their own imprint catering towards them called Vida, for instance. But, you know, I actually think that the future of Christian publishing globally is bright, considering how the church is growing mostly in the global South, in Africa, in Asia, in South America. I think it's within 10 to 20 years, one in five Christians are going to be non-Hispanic whites. As the sort of word picture paints of a typical Christian, will be a woman in a village in Nigeria or Brazil. I mean, that's going to be the Christian market, broadly, dominantly speaking. And so I think you see some of that reflected in Latin American countries, especially Brazil, as that market economically and technologically has sort of ballooned. You also have the evangelical population ballooning alongside them. I think it's within the last 10 years they have doubled to around 55 million or so. So that's like a quarter of the evangelical population within the U.S. And so, I think it's bright. I think it's a bright future. And I mean, you're leading the charge with translating all those books and giving us inspiration for how I think that should look as Christians or religious people to think about these markets that are emerging. And as the church begins to grow mostly in non-English speaking countries in the global South, I think that presents opportunities for us to grow alongside them as authors, for sure.
I agree. I'm like, I'm particularly fascinated because a lot of the, so my sister-in-law is Nigerian, and we had a half-Catholic wedding, you know, with Nigerians and singing, and they brought a lot of...
Oh, yeah.
They brought their... It was classic case in a cathedral, a Catholic cathedral in Edinburgh. Half the church was Nigerian, and they had, you know, my sister-in-law said, you know, we're going to have a Nigerian section of so it was just so funny in this very uptight kind of white middle class Catholic church. We had a lot, you know, a load of Nigerians singing what they sing in their church in Lagos, and it was a very different vibe, and the kind of the priest didn't quite know what to do with it, I think. But it was, but what I find interesting about that is that I think maybe the type of books that appeal to Christians in other countries will have a different flavour, because often they...
Oh, I hope so, sure. Yeah,
they've incorporated a lot of local traditions into their faith, and, you know, South American Christian, you know, Catholicism is quite different to the type we would practice in England, for example.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so...
Well, and I would hope that... Frankly, I would hope that some of us... you know, sort of speaking as a Christian, to my Christian brethren and sistren, would actually help raise up authors within those countries natively to write for their context, rather than sort of importing our own, you know, Americanized stories. Not that that's a bad thing necessarily, to provide, whether it's, you know, nonfiction sort of Christian living books, books on, you know, church growth or whatever.
Actually, yeah, I've got a book coming next year, which is going to be based in India and have a Hindu kind of religious aspect with Shiva and Nataraja, and which again is religious fiction, just not, it's not Christian fiction. It's clearly Hindu. And when I was when I was in India, I found the kind of Dan Brown equivalent, an Indian author who's the Dan Brown equivalent, writing these kind of religious action adventure thrillers. No one would have heard of him here because, you know, we don't have an Indian writer who does that kind of thing. We have Americans. So but what's happened now, of course, is Amazon KDP has opened up to Indian authors. So we should start seeing an influx of other, you know, nationalities. What's sad is I've had several emails from Indian authors saying, should I use a westernized name to publish under? And also from Portugal, from Brazil, same thing. Should I westernize my name because the main market is American and they won't buy a book from somebody with a different name? What do you reckon there? It's a tough one.
Man, that's fascinating. It's sad. I mean, you know, so shows how, you know, ethnocentric we are as,
but it's probably
as Westerners, as Americans,
isn't it?
Whether inside or outside the church, I'm sure. I mean, I would imagine the same would hold true, unfortunately, for, you know, my people, you know, Christians in America.
I'm not talking about Christians here.
No, sure. Yeah, right. But it's exciting, though, that there are these models set up, whether it's Kobo or Kindle, you know, reaching out into these emerging markets that will empower people in their own countries to write for their own countries. And that's, I guess, my hope for the Global South, or anywhere outside of, you know, the Western nations, when it comes to Christians, especially writing for their own people, is to be able to leverage these technologies to serve their country, to serve their communities in a way that makes sense to them, rather than simply importing our junk and our strategies.
No, I agree. Okay, so coming back to the religious stuff. So this year I've been excited about Noah, the film Noah, and Exodus coming in next month, and Tim LaHaye's, as we've mentioned, Left Behind movie coming out next year, I believe. Isn't Nicolas Cage in that? It's like a big, I think it's going to be a big movie. Like, anyway, my point is,
is there
a mainstream renaissance interest in these biblical stories? Because, I mean, The Da Vinci Code, which wasn't Christian, right, but it was about the church, was, you know, pretty much 10 years ago. Do you think we're coming into a phase where people are more interested in religion?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a couple things there. I would say there's a renaissance, as you put it, of maybe not necessarily biblical stories, but big stories, which I would say began perhaps with Tolkien's Lord of the Rings being resurrected and put on the big screen. Because here's this guy, you know, it wasn't an obviously Christian or religious movie, but he was a Christian who wrote out of his Christian convictions, talking about the big stuff of life, the big questions. I think the same thing perhaps would hold true with Lost. My wife and I just watched through the six seasons again, and I was just fascinated to see how much they deal with the big, the existential, metaphysical questions of life, nature of good and evil, fate versus free will, nature of the afterlife. And I think that people are hungry for that kind of engagement with the big stories. And of course, you know, Bible stories kind of fit into that because they do connect to that bigger story that I think that all of us are are trying to connect to ourselves with our own life. So I think that's part of it. There is this deep longing for bigger stories, but I would also say that, let's be frank, that the Christian market is sort of a cash cow at some level. And Hollywood woke up to that fact with perhaps the Passion of the Christ maybe was woke Hollywood up to this reality that there's this very hungry market for Bible films and especially with, again, the evangelical industrial complex gets behind one of those films, it can go through the roof. And so I think that there's an aspect where Hollywood sees that there's a big market, obviously, in a viewing sense, but in a financial sense. I know that I was reading some things about Noah before that came out, that they hired some evangelical consultants to make sure that it would be, theologically appropriate and approved by some of the gatekeepers, influencers within the evangelical community. And they ended up editing it to take some things out, to massage and to shift, to make it more palatable, even though
there were
still leaders who kind of just went bonkers about it. I thought it was great, actually. There were some things that I was like, okay.
It wasn't biblical. I mean, there was a lot that wasn't biblical.
And was relying on, Jewish midrash and some other extra biblical things. But, I mean, frankly, as evangelicals, we do that with the Noah story anyway. We, like, sanitize it and make it about, like, rainbows and bunnies and, little doves floating around. And, frankly, I thought that, man, the best depiction was that movie about the kind of, not only destruction, but also the psychological internal tension that Noah would have felt, hearing all these people dying, children, and bodies thumping against the ark. I mean, yeah, that I think he depicted it perfectly, and it's too bad that others didn't see it my way.
you never please everyone, especially with religion or politics, as you were.
Yes,
you were
for sure. Right.
But it's funny because with this book, Gates of Hell, I end up, I don't even know why this has happened, but I've ended up looking for Sodom and Gomorrah and reading those stories again. And, similar destruction, right? People are really behaving badly. We're just going to destroy everything now. And even the poor wife who turns around and gets turned into the pillar of salt, just because she looked behind her. And these stories are kind of awesome. So I'm writing about that area in Israel where Sodom and Gomorrah supposedly were.
Sure.
Really fascinating stuff. But anyway, we could talk about religious things forever. But you have mentioned the we should start like a theology podcast. We'd have a really small audience, but
hey, sign me up. I'm there.
That'd be quite funny.
Collaborate on a podcast, collaborate on a fiction series.
It would be
interesting.
That would be
cool. Sky's the limit.
It is. Well, and let's talk about the sky's the limit and the cash cow thing. Clearly, this is my struggle, right? And part of the reason we're talking about this, I know that, and my agent basically said when I had a New York agent and had, pitched her Pentecost prophecy in Exodus, of course, they can't get much more Christian in my book titles. And she said, we could, these books are too Christian to be mainstream, but you're not a Christian, so we can't sell them to the Christian market. So what's happened to me and a number of other authors who I've talked with, it's you kind of fall through a gap where most of my audience, my fiction audience, are Christians, ranging from, I have a Greek Orthodox priest who's a reader, you're a reader. I have a lot of other Christians who read my books. And so my issue is I can't lie and say I'm a Christian, and therefore I can't be acceptable in one way. But what do you think about books that deal with, like books like mine, of which there are quite a lot, what should one do with these books in approaching the Christian market?
Yeah, those are good questions. And I think that there's a couple things that play into understanding the market in a theological sense and a cultural sense. That both, I think, Christians as well as non-Christians writing for that, or have books that, are religious like yours or spiritual that touch on the big questions and the big story. And the first one is theological. I mean, it's recognizing that there are theological convictions that Christians care deeply about, especially evangelicals who I would imagine have read a lot of your books. I think you've even said you've gotten some emails from others who've said, hey, Pentecostones, what, that's not in my, it's not in my Bible. What's up with that, right? And that connects to, you know, the doctrine of revelation, you know, this belief that God stepped into our world and communicated to us about himself and us and in our creation, as well in this thing called the Bible, in this book, using human authors, inspiring them, the doctrine of inspiration, in a way that communicated what he wanted to communicate without error. Again, inerrancy, another doctrine. And so when you introduce these themes, these spiritual themes, or especially religious themes that kind of scrape the surface of Christian doctrine or the Christian faith or the Bible itself, you're going to get some pushback because they grate against the theological sensibilities of the audience. Does that make sense?
Mm. So there will be people listening who are Christians, who are writing Christian books, or books that will appeal to Christians. How would you suggest they market Christian books specifically? Is there an ecosystem of blogs and book bloggers and podcasts and all of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what's really important to keep in mind is, first of all, having an endorsement from a known Christian personality is pretty required. Because part of what the evangelical, again, I'm going back to evangelicalism because it dominates the Christian market, is we're sort of tribal in how we invite or uninvite those who are on the inside or outside. And we mark insiders versus outsiders based on, the brands of known personalities. And so if you have a book that's endorsed by XYZ, then, okay, I can trust that that is going to align with my theological and spiritual convictions. And so that would be probably marketing tip number one, is trying to connect with some of those known personalities and getting an endorsement. And then forwarding them along to those influencers in the first place, the book bloggers, the Christian magazines, the Christian radio shows, the Christian TV shows. We have our own Christian subculture that loves to get sort of like Christian stuff. And so reaching those influencers will reach their readers and will influence them to hopefully, you know, buy your stuff or purchase your book, to engage your content, engage your book. So those two things I think are crucial for Christians and even non-Christians. Like for you to get an endorsement from, an evangelical pastor or someone would be really helpful, I think, probably, for entering into that market and building that coveted know, like, and trust. I mean, that's like marketing 101, right? Mm. And so to build that know, like, and trust, you need the endorsement, you need the influencers to get on board.
Mm. And you did say earlier that...
I would add on to that also... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say about the trust aspect. You'd mentioned that self-publishers are not necessarily going to be so accepted. Do you see, you know, because they haven't been vetted in some way, is that changing? I mean, you know, is self-publishing becoming more accepted?
Yeah, good question. You know, I think that the evangelical market, in a lot of ways, the Christian market has usually been behind the times 3 to 5 years anyway. And I find that now there is this growing acceptance. I mean, there has been an imprint, Westbo, which is part of Thomas Nelson, which is a author solution outfit.
Yes. We wouldn't necessarily go there.
Advocate, yeah, in light of author solution stuff. So there is sort of that route to gain that imprint, and that know, like, and trust. That's my own story. I was able to connect with a pretty prominent evangelical, Scott McKnight. He's a New Testament scholar who has written a number of things. He wrote the foreword to my first book, The Unoffensive Gospel of Jesus. So that was super duper helpful in building know, like, and trust with people. I also got some endorsements from a seminary professor, another pastor, and another Christian author. I did that. I just sort of done that from the beginning, and I would certainly encourage Christians to do that. But I do sense that there is this growing interest in receiving and trusting independent voices outside of sort of the mainstream. But it's going to take time, and it's a tough nut to crack. And I think that potential authors and interested writers should just kind of be patient and do the work that they need to get those endorsements and to influence those influencers. And I think the issue of branding is super important for Christians to wrestle with. It's one of the things that I wrestled with. I remember when I was in your little course on turning ideas into cash, you, I think, critiqued my former website, novuslumen.net. And you were like, you need to scrap that and go with your own personal name. You need to brand your ideas, brand your stuff around yourself. And as a Christian, that was super uncomfortable because we're sort of bred to make it not about us. It's not about us and our story. It's about Christ and his story, right? And yeah, that's true. But when it comes to the marketplace and with selling ideas and engaging with people, building know, like, and trust, you got to engage in a way that people demand and require you to do so. And that means focusing on building your brand, whether it's through blogging, tweeting, writing your bio in a way that incorporates, let's call it your Christian credentials or your ministry credentials, or your maybe you're a youth group leader. You can put that in your bio to signal to people that, hey, yeah, I'm a Christian who does Christian things. A Christian publishing friend of mine encouraged me to put in my bio that not only was I a pastor, but a pastor within the Evangelical Covenant Church, because that signals, hey, he's part of this known denomination. He's an evangelical, building know, like, and trust. And so I think that branding issue is one of those things that's going to be interesting for Christian authors to navigate, but it's a tension that has to be done. And I would encourage people to be okay with it for the sake of not building yourself up, but for the sake of Christ and his story and hopefully bringing life transformation.
Yeah, well, you mentioned Rick Warren. You know, he's a well-known personality. I, you know, I've read The Purpose-Driven Life. You know, I think,
right,
I think lots of non-Christians may well have read some of his stuff. And he, you know, I think a personality can help these, all of us. And you write nonfiction, sure, as well, right? So it's interesting, yes, you say that, because I would have thought that Christian publishers, in the same way as other publishers, would want the author to build up their own brand so that they are a known entity, so that people will say, you know, I want Jeremy's next book.
Well, yes, I think you're for sure right. And especially within evangelicalism, there is definitely this fascination with personalities, and churches are personality driven. Unfortunately, we've had some recent examples of the downside of personality driven products as well as churches. So yeah,
everywhere.
The publisher, what's that?
That happens everywhere. That's not a Christian.
That happens everywhere for sure. And that's, I think, the tension. Obviously publishers are going to want to know your Twitter stats and know what your brand is and whatever. But I think as an author, it's awkward to figure out how to be okay with that and to navigate building that, not for the sake of myself or even the publisher, but for leveraging my experiences. So for instance, for me, I think I should, and what you've helped me and my wife have helped me, who's a marketer, have helped me grow into be okay with, is being okay with letting people know that I was a pastor to politicians, that I was part of an influential progressive evangelical organization, that I have degrees in divinity and theology. And so I can leverage those parts of my story and my own experiences with having a crisis of faith in order to talk about my next book, which is a sort of spiritual coming of age story, which helps people navigate their own crises of faith, or however you say it. Mm-hmm. So the point isn't to build myself, but to help hopefully build Christ and his story, as well as encourage other people. So I guess that's just a mindset shift that Christian authors need to make when it comes to branding, is leveraging their experience and their story for the sake of the message that they want to communicate.
Mm. Which you did very well there, and brings us on to asking about your novel. So you're moving into fiction, and you mentioned the coming of age story there. Tell us a bit more about that and how you have balanced that truth versus fiction aspect, which I think is a real line that you will be difficult to walk through, right?
Sure. You know, a lot of, well, my interest in fiction or in writing fiction really grew out of pastoring. The conversation kind of at the beginning about pursuing the academy versus pursuing the church. Yeah, it really crystallized when I started pastoring and realizing people engage ideas not in some like theological tract, or my best sermons, to to be frank, were the ones that were story-driven. Those are the ones that people engaged with, not where I was just droning on about some theological idea. And so I began to realize, man, if I want to influence or help people in their own spiritual journeys, then the way to do that, I think, is through story. And so I thought, man, let's try it. So never wrote a thing of fiction in my life, signed up to NaNoWriMo 2 years ago, of course, right? That's where it all starts. And turned out this story that sort of fictionalizes my own spiritual journey into in a way that I hope will help others who have sort of grown up in a similar, what I would call, fundamentalist environment and wonder if that faith still connects to their modern world. And so I follow this protagonist, Peter Daniel Young, who returns back home to go train to be a pastor and takes his sort of new progressive faith with him and is challenged in that to reconnect to the historic Christian faith. And I kind of use it as a way to teach, because it's definitely a teaching book. It's definitely a book where I'm still kind of unpacking my own thoughts and answering and asking my own questions, but it's definitely more interested in encouraging people to kind of, in some ways, do what I did, to not let go of the vintage Christian faith, as I put it, but to realize that that does still connect. And so it is kind of more a teaching book, but it's meant to help people who have grown up in the church, who might have left and wonder if it's still, if this whole Christian thing still makes sense.
And what's the title and when is it out?
Yeah, From There and Back Again, releasing, actually pre-orders start in like a week, releasing end of January. Yeah, I'm excited to see how this works with communicating and kind of fleshing out ideas in a fictional form rather than the non-fictional way that I've done before.
And is that title influenced by The Hobbit?
Embarrassingly, I didn't even realize that The Hobbit's little book was There and Back Again. But no, I can't say that. It just was what was in my head when I was thinking about my story and the story that I wanted to tell.
Well, that kind of resonance. It's funny because when I wrote Pentecost, I had an original title, which was Mandala. And I chose the title Pentecost in order to resonate in people's minds with people who would know what Pentecost means. And what's funny is when people read it who don't know what Pentecost is, they get the word wrong. So I'll get emails where people just mangle the word because they didn't know what it was. So it's interesting, as soon as you say that title, a lot of people will get a resonance, which isn't a bad thing. However,
sure,
is, you know, The Hobbit, which, you know, is not maybe,
which is similar about journey and conquest and coming of age, and that's kind of, those are the themes of the book. So I guess that's a good thing.
It is. No, I think the resonance thing for me, you know, I love one word titles. I'm only just moving off them at the moment, but I think these strong words, like desecration for me was, I mean, that was it's a very violent word, and which I think
kind of slaps you in the face, doesn't it? And
yeah, it's pretty
hard.
That's
okay, because
as
people who want to try and flesh out ideas, that's what we want to do as authors, is kind of slap our reader in the face.
We do, but it's interesting with the Christian side. I think the title and words, they do make a big difference because they do bring up, so, yeah, like you say, the stories. The film is called Noah because everybody knows what Noah is, you know, and you immediately brings up the resonance of all of that history. Even if you're not a Christian, you still have it in your school background or your whatever background, if you're white and Western. You know, generally,
yeah, for sure,
that's what you would get. So anyway, that was just a comment on marketing through titles. You know, these words are so important, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're pregnant with meaning, especially for people who grew up in the church or in a Western context. Yeah, their mind's going to jump to something immediately. And that's a great marketing tip for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so where can people find you and your books and your blog online?
Sure. Thanks to you, jeremybauma.com is where people can find my stuff. And then Amazon has it all, as well as Kobo and Barnes & Noble.
Yeah. I hope you don't. Well, you know, I always hate doing critiques, but a lot of people wouldn't know what Novus Lumen means.
Absolutely. No, it's the best best thing that happened to my writing career. Thank you, Ms. Penn.
No, not at all. No, and I really appreciate your time, Jeremy, and your honesty. And I love discussing this stuff, and I hope we can, you know, continue to have these type of conversations, because I, you know, I continue to wrestle with these questions, and many people do. You know, we often don't talk about it because
sure
it's difficult, but I think you know, the, like you said, the big questions are so important to people, and you know, become part of our lives and part of our writing. And what I love, I'm just rereading Stephen King's It at the moment. Do you read Stephen King at all? You not your thing?
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do.
So have you you've read It?
Not It. Yeah. No.
Well, I'm reading it at the moment. What's so fascinating is it is just a good versus evil story. You know, and it as it progresses, I'm like, this is just, you know, this is good, this is evil. It's like The Stand, you know, and The Shining, and so many of his books are good versus evil, and good triumphs generally after a lot of gore. So, you know, this is what a lot of people want in their books, regardless of religious persuasion. You know, it's fascinating. Anyway, enough. So brilliant. Thank you so much for your time, Jeremy. That was fantastic.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. And let me know when you want to do it again.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free Author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.